The Mitchell's Front Page Podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11. Now on Mitchell's Front Page, the Monday Sports Panel.
And a very good morning to Peter and Bucket. How are you both this morning?
Tremendous.
Very well,
morning.
Mitch.
Yep.
Good to see you, and hopefully you're doing well. And we're about to get on to the Geelong Football Club, which I'm really looking forward to hearing a bit more about. I'm sure you've got a lot of recommendations there on your list. But before we get to that point, on the line now is Paul Blaine, who is the president of the Geelong Cricket Club. Paul, good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you, and good morning to everyone, and thanks for having me on.
Can you just talk us through the weekend of results? Was the weather a bit better over this weekend? Because we've been talking to you of recent times, and it feels like everything's been washed out lately. So how did things go on the weekend?
Yeah, slightly better this weekend. The rain stayed away, the wind was up a little bit, but not too badly. The last few weeks have been pretty challenging.
So talk us through the results.
Our first men's side batted first, we're all out for 203, Fitzroy Doncaster are 3 for 117, so there's certainly a game on there. Our seconds bowled Fitzroy Doncaster out for 268, and we're currently none for 8, so that's a game on as well. Our thirds bowled Fitzroy Doncaster out for 133, and we're currently 4 for 76, so that'll be an interesting game next week as well. And our fourths were bowled out for 127, and they're up against it with Fitzroy Doncaster currently none for 46. Our women's side both played double headers yesterday, and both sides won one and lost one. But with the second side winning one was enough to get them into the T20 Grand Final next weekend. So hopefully they can get a bit of silverware for the club.
Anything else to leave us with, or any other results you want to touch on?
We had probably the outstanding contributions this weekend were Scott Condy took five wickets in the thirds, and Josh Maston 4 for 67 in the seconds. We're pretty even across the board this weekend, I think. We're second day next Saturday, and hopefully we can get a few of those games over the line.
Excellent. Well, good luck with that. Thank you so much for being on the program this morning.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Paul Blaine there from the Geelong Cricket Club. Okay, Bucket, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mitch.
Now, Western United, how did they go over the weekend?
Oh, very, very disappointing, I thought. I watched all of the game. They started very slowly again. They were trying to play catch-up soccer all night, and it just didn't work at all. I mentioned on Friday the average age of that side is 32 years of age. Maybe the old legs got a bit tired. I don't know. Maybe they got to go back and have a look at the youth around the place.
Yeah, it was disappointing because it was one where they could have really consolidated that top two spot on the ladder. But
yeah.
But early days, so I guess, although they've, I don't know how long the team's been together for, leading up to the season. But yeah, so it was one that probably I think we all thought would win. So wasn't a really good weekend for the Melbourne clubs.
You can understand, tackling the older type guys, but gee whiz, somewhere along the line we've got to look at the youth, not only around Geelong, but wherever it might else come from. Like this important players from overseas countries all the time. I'm not sure if that's a real benefit to soccer in Australia, really.
Well, it's a debate, and I think we've had it before on this program. If you get the good players in from overseas, maybe people are more inclined to show up. And incidentally, do you have the crowd figure as to how many people went down to GMHBA Stadium on Saturday night?
Yeah, about 5,500 again, or just over 5,500.
So a bit lower than what they would have perhaps liked.
It was interesting. The match of the day was played in Sydney, of course, and what did they get there? 16,000, 17,000 people there, didn't they? Peter,
Yeah, they did.
I don't know what's their goal for the sort of crowd they'd like to attract, but there's not much of an excuse when it's on a Saturday night. You can't say, the kids had school the next morning or anything like that. And the final result was Western United 0 and Newcastle Jets 1, and the goal coming through at the 36-minute mark there.
Yes, it was pretty interesting. And basically, when you send the goal kick there, it was a pretty easy goal, I thought. One of those ones, you just run into an open goal and go bang,
Incidentally, there was a video going around just recently of soccer where I think it was a penalty shootout and they were kicking the guy. I don't know if you saw this video. The player kicked it and it hit the top of the goal and bounced off, and the goalkeeper ran out celebrating, thinking that it had been missed. Yeah. And in fact, the ball landed on the ground and then rolled into the goal. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was hilarious.
There was some. There has been some very embarrassing moments for some of the goalkeepers.
Yeah,
you know, as you say, they've run forward to pick up the ball and then kick it back out, and they've run over the top of the ball and it's gone between their legs or whatever. Yeah, similar things.
And also in politics, there's a saying, you know, when someone's had an own goal, and that saying originates from soccer, and you just have to go and watch some of the videos of where the person's accidentally kicked it into their own goal.
Yeah. Yeah, but sport in general, they have many of those type of moments, don't they?
Soccer itself seems to be more fraught with it just because a goal is such a significant moment, but also with that penalty shootout, you know, one goal, whether you kick it or miss it, can determine who wins the game. It's pretty intense. At least in AFL, you've got time to recover.
Yeah, yes, exactly, you're right. Yeah, and basically, we do want a bit of excitement brought into soccer, I think, and a bit of that might go a long way to helping climb, because I'm not quite too happy with the way that soccer in Australia is going. The Socceroos are going all right, that's okay, I go along with it, but it's a drop off from the Socceroos down to the next level.
That's fair enough. Do you what's the coverage like when you watch it on the TV? Do you reckon it's good?
Oh, it's interesting. Yeah, you get a lot of commentators. I talk a lot, and they tell you what should be done, how it should be done, and everything like that. Yeah, but when you hear the different conditions, there was no. I don't think there's any camera behind the goals down here at Geelong. Other grounds there'll be cameras and that type of stuff. Yeah, so perhaps that's something they should fix up.
Now next week they're playing the Central Coast Mariners, and that's up there at. What's it called? Central Coast Stadium.
Yeah.
So that's going to be on Sunday at 6 p.m. So again, a strange time to have a game on a Sunday night. But that's just because I'm used to the AFL fixture, but 6 p.m. start. But anyway, that's Central Coast problem.
They'll be in danger of losing that game too, because basically, I think this is their second game outside Victoria, I think, isn't it, Peter? Something like that.
And we've only played three or four down here.
Four games down.
We've only won the one down here.
Yeah,
so.
Still, the question would have to be: is it much of a home ground advantage for you when only 4,500 to 5,000 people turn up? It's not exactly the same as having 30,000.
I fully agree with you, because as we know, in AFL football, even in country football, if the local crowd gets behind you, I think that gives them a bigger advantage, really.
The only advantage they did have was that they were playing Newcastle, who had to fly over, but that was about it, wasn't it, really? It's hard to say. I definitely want to go and watch one of the games, but just waiting for the right time and the weather to pick up a little bit too. Yep. So. But
I'll wait for them to send me a media invite, I think.
Yeah.
So if we just have a look at the table, you've got Melbourne City up the top, and Western United is sitting in fourth spot. So they're not doing too badly in the overall scheme of things.
We're second before the weekend. Yeah.
Yep. They're going all right compared with Victory. By gee, haven't they? Yeah, the bottom's fallen right out of that club, hasn't it?
It has. Yeah, they're really struggling.
Yeah, really,
they?
Really. Yes.
I think they've only got 5 points.
No, the power makers in the competition. In Victoria
It takes a bit of time to get used to soccer, but there's obviously a big emphasis on goals for and goals against to work out how they separate the tie.
And three points for a win, one for a tie.
Western United's on 10 and Melbourne City's on 13. So moving right along, we've brought in the Geelong Cats book today to have a bit of a look at the Geelong Football Club as part of the series that we're going through all of the AFL teams. So how is the Geelong Football Club going?
Very interesting story there to be told of the Geelong Football Club over the last 30 years. Yeah, and it's been a great story in many, many ways. Like, all this started in 1989 when they brought in Malcolm Blight, and Costa come in with him, and gee, haven't they formed a combination, and along with Cooker, and that they stabilised that club no end. And during those 30 years, they've only missed playing finals on 8 years. Eight years.
Not a bad performance, is it?
So that's a real good. They're always in the zone, aren't they, the Geelong Football Club? And the coaches over that period of time was Blight, Ayres, Thompson and Scott Peter.
Mm.
And there's, you know, basically there's three premierships in that time. They've made the finals, you know, finals on quite a few times. I think they've been runners up on four occasions. Well, you know, what do you think about that effort, Peter?
Yeah, no, I guess it is when you look at it. They've done very, very well. We always look at Sydney and go, you know, like Sydney, a very consistent side, always thereabouts. Yeah. But yeah, let's not take anything away from Geelong.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought last year, to try and put in perspective, I guess, again, we look at a movie title, I would have gone, I'd say, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. We've played three prelims in 4 years or whatever. Yeah, so yeah. You just, look, they were untouchable in the first half of the season, basically.
Exactly
they
right,
looked
yeah.
really good. And let's have a look at Gary Ablett. He had 26 goals in the first 13 matches, and then things start, the few little niggling injuries. And I think, again, that searching again for that number one ruckman.
Yeah.
That was a problem again. And look, our forwards, I think if Rowan and Dalhouse had been fit, or along, like, they were dangerous up forward, yeah. And along with Tommy Hawkins. And so there's still those two areas that were just, but that number one ruckman was, I don't know. I guess you can look at Tommy Hawkins being suspended for the preliminary
final. Oh, that was bad.
I mean, that was a huge blow.
Yeah.
Look, I think that. Yeah, you'd have to give them a rating of a C plus or a B overall. But again, that finals, I just think there's still a few little areas that they must fix fairly quickly.
Yeah.
Because we're starting to get a few players aging a bit now.
Yeah.
You know, look, everyone's a year older, but when you're into your 31, 32s, and Paddy and Gazza and Harry and a few of those.
The premiership window doesn't stay open for long, does it?
No.
Peter, there's one question I'd like to ask you. You've been around football for a long, long time. There's three different groups of players. They are the elite, they are the good, and the other group is the average. I think that's where our problem is, isn't it?
We've got a lot of average.
Yeah, average players who sometimes show a little bit, and then when you sort of start to think these guys are starting to go right, and they fall away.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. One, when you think back on it too, when Hawkins was suspended, they just went back to the well and dragged Lockie Henderson back. Overlooking even Fort. Buzzy.
Yeah.
I just don't seem to be able to get it a settled side. I mean, they don't make wholesale changes, but they do certainly. It was disappointing to see that they couldn't sort that rough thing out. And Scotty just sometimes, like, he was his defiant best, I guess. He just sometimes, he refused to explain some of the selection calls, but. There's plenty of positives.
Yeah.
Jordan Clark, I think he's going to be really good. And look, at the draft is going to be interesting. But you have a look who's gone. Abbott's gone. Well, young Brownless, Oscar, he'll be redrafted. Wiley Buzzer's gone. Kumiko's gone. Henderson, Jermaine Jones, Tim Kelly, obviously, Scotty Selwood and Zach Smith. But I guess Jack Stevens is going to be the talking point for next season.
Yes, it's going to be interesting to watch the coaching situation too, because I've been pretty firm about it for a long, long time. He seems to be more of a solo coach rather than a group coach, like having guys around him who can advise him whether he listens or not. I'm not too sure about that.
Love to be a fly on the wall in the coach's box, wouldn't you, on a Saturday?
Absolutely love to. And particularly, there's such big teams of coaches now, there'd be so many different points of view.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of controversial decisions taken, including leaving the Ruckman out in that game against Collingwood. I don't think we'll ever forget that one.
That probably I might rank second to when Richmond in that final against, who was it against? Was it Adelaide or Port Adelaide when they won the toss in one of the finals? Kicked against the Breeze and were nine goals down a quarter time. I mean, sometimes you just think, I don't know what happened there. Yeah.
Just a brain fade.
Yeah.
Over that period of time, we had four Brownlow medalists. You know, it went through the system. Couch, he was a beauty. You know, Couch was. Bartel, he was another great player. Ablett, what can you say about Ablett and Dangerfield? So we've had some real quality players there. And, I think sometimes we've been found wanting.
Just shows how hard it is to win a premiership. Yeah. I mean, three.
Yeah.
Probably could have been, in that period of time that you go back to, Buck, it could have been five or six flags with it. Just an ounce of luck.
Yeah,
a couple of things went wrong. The Hawthorn one was a classic, wasn't it?
Yeah,
2008.
The first one that kicked off when 89
when they give Hawthorn that huge start and then fell down by a goal in one of the greatest games I've ever seen in football.
Yeah. Don't they say that's probably the best grand final?
It was exciting, wasn't it, James?
I think it is. If you showed someone now that was unfamiliar with the game of Aussie rules and said, sit down and have a look at this game and then have a look at some of our games that we see in recent years, and especially under Ross Lyon.
Not naming names.
There's a huge gap, isn't there?
And Dermot knocked out. I mean, it was more physical back then.
It was all planned before the start of the game. Take him out, knock him out. I mean, we don't want to see any of that now.
No, we don't.
Especially with the concussion and the way things are going. But I think, they've got picks 15, 19 and 25 Geelong. So there's some handy... Well, there's a couple of very interesting players in the draft. I've just been going through that. A couple of names have come up that you would like to think that Geelong may be able to get their hands on is Josh Worrell. He's played every position in the last 2-3 years in his football career. He's been under the guidance of Matty Lloyd the college Matty does some coaching at. Another one is Fisher McGazy. Now, he's from Sandringham. He's played both ends of the ground. He's likened to Carl Hooker a lot, but he was originally a backman, but he 197 centimetres and 91 kilos. He's a ripper. And Harrison Jones, who may go later in the draft, he's probably the best tall forward coming up in the pool this year, and that's an interesting one for Geelong to look at again. Mm. And these three and even Cooper Stevens, who broke his leg this year, but they're four players that would be ready to play straight away next season. So with those draft picks, 15, 19 and 25, Geelong get the right players banged.
Cooper Stevens comes from Colic, doesn't he?
I think he does.
I think he broke his leg playing with the Falcons.
He did.
People speak very highly of him. So it's going to be interesting. Geelong, there's a group of people then trying to get a top 10 pick. How are they going to work that, Peter?
Yeah, well, look, I'm not too sure. I mean, picks 1, 2, and then GWS have got probably the hands on the third one from the academy. But the top two are definitely standouts. They say the draft doesn't go that deep this year. So I sometimes wonder where they say, we want to get pick 15 instead of 19 and that. Yeah. I cannot get my head around that at times, because they might think they can get hold of so-and-so at pick 15, but if he goes earlier or whatever, that's the clubs sort that out. But I think that there's opportunity for some couple of players at least from the draft to step straight into
it. I think the way the talent is around, young talent around Geelong, they should really look hard at a lot of those kids there, because every year for quite some time there's been a good kid come through this system.
Yeah. See, Falcons haven't had not as much hype about the Falcons players this year. I mean, it's been a very good breeding ground for
many years. Yeah. Starting with Couch and those sort of guys, and other players have gone to other clubs.
So how do you balance the fact that there could be some exciting new talent coming through up against the fact that some of the big names like Ablett and Dangerfield are definitely moving on in years and in some cases maybe a bit past their prime? Mm. How does that augur for Geelong's performances next season?
Yes, well, I think I just hope that the recruiters of the Geelong Football Club get out there and have a look at these guys and don't rely on reports in the paper from a journalist.
Speaking of reports in the paper, there's one I want to get to in a second. Colin Carter wrote something.
I just think what they've got to do, they need some players can step in very quickly. Some players have got to take that next step, and they've got to do it very quickly. And that all comes down to how the development's going. Yeah. And some clubs, they say the players haven't developed, and et cetera, et cetera. I think we've got to take the pressure. You'd love to see Ablett just playing down that forward, just pinch hitting down there.
Peter, I've got to make the call. I think Geelong over the last 30 years has underachieved.
Oh, to a certain... it's hard.
Mitch?
If you go year by year.
Well, I think if you look at the number of premierships attained in the last 30 years, which is 3, based on the list that we've got, you'd probably like to see a few more than that.
And three in a very short period of time.
But that depends if you want to use premierships as your metric, because just, I don't know if you saw this, in Saturday's paper, Colin Carter, the Geelong president, wrote an article, and it talked about the things that we should be thankful for as Geelong supporters, and one of them was that Geelong is the most winning team. If you look at the on-field win-loss record, Geelong has lost won more games than any other AFL team over the past 10 and 30 years.
Yes, well, I get reminded of that situation on many and many occasions. Yeah, but look at their home and away record. I says, look at their finals record too.
Look at the games in September.
Look, I know one person who we could sit and argue until the cows come home, and that's Dick Philpott himself. Dick is a dead set on success of a club is measured by the trophies in the cabinet, trophy cabinet.
Yeah. Well, I think he'd be right about that, to be honest. I mean, you don't win by just winning home and away games.
No, that's right. But the other thing, too, more so country football, is that some clubs have gone out and bought premierships, and then you see the clubs either disband or amalgamate. Yeah. So at the end of the day, you can be as consistent as you like and have a good culture at the club, have strong support, a strong sponsorship base, et cetera, et cetera. And you may not win as many flags as you should, but at the end of the day, you must have a club.
And just on that point, sorry, just to interrupt, Colin Carter's written a few things that we should be thankful for, and he's done it, I think, through the lens of the off-field performance, which you'd have to say the Geelong Football Club's quite good. They've got the rebuilt stadium. We've now got a team in the AFLW. They've got $16 million coming in from their supporters, so people have been philanthropic and have given that. Record membership, he says, debt-free, more games at GMHBA, which you'd hope so, given how extensively it's been redeveloped. They've got their participants in the community programs, and also gambling free. They've got rid of the poker machine licenses, and I think that tavern that they had up in Point Cook. Which I'm not quite as big on. I don't think it's necessarily the biggest factor, but he's written that there, and he thinks they're doing a good job. So you have to say off-field they're doing okay. It's the on-field performance and the trophies in the cabinet.
Oh, yes. When you listen to that list you just read out there, there's a lot of very, very good things that has happened down at Geelong, for sure. But the on-the-field is very important,
You've got no control what happens at times, certain control what happens at times, on-field with injuries, etc. Off-field, and I always say bad clubs are bad managed. Well, it fizz up. Bad management, if it's not working well off-field, it certainly does. That will show on-field because suddenly... And it's like...
The two are interlinked in summary.
Exactly. You need to have a good club with good members, sponsors, and a reasonable amount of success, because without that... There's no money comes in, so with no money you can't look at players, etc., etc. So it just goes around the circle.
The big thing, like in Geelong, is that for people who follow football, there's such a great division of people here. They might barrack for Footscray, Collingwood, Carlton and everything like that. We don't seem to be totally behind the football club in general, I don't think.
What, in Geelong?
Like in Geelong, as far as people who live in this area.
Well, I guess over the years, I mean, that's the thing. People move to Geelong. I mean, I've come down to Geelong. I barracked for Essendon.
You're never going to get 100% coverage.
No, but if Essendon or GWS is at B now, with Luke there, if they're not in the finals, of course I'm on Geelong's bandwagon.
I can remember when I used to run buses from Ballarat, Colac, Warrnambool and that come down here for Geelong games. I don't know whether that still happens or not. I'm not too sure about that area.
I don't know. I know they've got buses from Ballarat that I think come down. So finally, the measure for success. Where should Geelong finish on the ladder in 2020?
I think, where should they finish? Well, first of all, if they can pick up a replacement for Tim Kelly, that's going to be the huge hole that's been left down there, because in only 2 years, he done a lot for the Geelong Football Club.
He
put their brand right on top, didn't he?
Well, you probably thank him for winning as many games as we did this year.
Exactly, and that's why someone else has to step and fill that void.
And he played his heart out in the finals even after everyone knew he was going.
And a real smart footballer too.
So you really want, as I say, a couple of players to step up, one of the young kids to come in, Jack Stevens, to be really in his form.
I think we need a big centre half forward too. Yeah, if we had one of those big telling, high marking centre half forwards, I think that could make a big difference. You're a smaller man, you rely on the crumbs, don't you?
So you've dodged the question a bit there. I need a ladder position.
Oh, all right. Well, they should finish in the top eight.
Really?
Yeah, they should finish
in
there.
Well, that's pessimistic.
Yeah, but basically...
You wouldn't say top four.
No, I wouldn't say top four. But basically, you've just got to hope some of these youngsters like Cockatoo and a few others in there can lift their game, because at times they showed they are real class. And if those guys can come up and perform, you know, week in and week out, that's going to be the difference.
Pete? I'm going around that fifth to eighth.
Yeah.
They should make finals, but I'm not too sure I can see them finishing top four. They'll need everything to go their way. Mm. They certainly won't need any injuries. And
I think I'm going to split the difference and say that they'll probably finish about in the top six, I reckon. Yeah. We'll see how it plays out, but who knows how it's going to be with all the clubs next year, and the competition will become tougher and they've got ageing players. But can we just one thing, please stop the hype.
Hype.
Yes.
I don't need to hear how this is the best team since 2007 and the premiership's in the bag.
You'll never, ever stop that because the supporters out there, they can only see one thing.
Well, I think
when we win, we're great. When we lose, we're...
Well, Scotty's already come out and said that he thinks the side will be better next season than what it was this year. So
he's went away studying too, hasn't he?
Well, it worked for Damien Hardwick. He went over and studied. He's come back a better coach.
We
better take a break and we'll come back to do the final word.
This is Mitchell Dye with Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse.
And just about there for the day, Wes J with you after 11 o'clock. Time for the final word, Bucket.
Yes, I've got to talk about the Richmond Football Club. They're living the dream, aren't they? In the last two years, a total of $7.227 million profit. That's great, isn't it?
And Peter?
Can be done. Again, to it, to people playing sport and involved in sport, just remember again, we have a look at James Patterson, costing himself a spot in the first test for personal abuse, and it's only a game at the end of the day, so let's all be careful when we're out there playing sport. Just be mindful of what we say.
Well said, I think. Well, thank you very much to both of you. We'll be listening on Friday with Dennis, and I'll be back tomorrow live from the Dunes Ocean Grove.
The Mitchell's Front Page podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 to 11. Or search for Mitchell's Front Page on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or wherever you get your podcasts.